You've been through pre-Cana, maybe you've even said, I do, and now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we'll share sage wisdom and practical advice from couples who've been married for 20 plus years. My name is Gabby Quinlan. Today, I have with me the Keeleys from Texas. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, just tell us your names and where you're from and how long you've been married.
So my name is Esther Keeley, and I'm married to Tom. And we are originally from Massachusetts. We'll be married 45 years in May. And so when you say 20 plus years, so wow, it seems like it hasn't been that long, but yes, yeah. It has been.
45 is amazing.
It is.
Oh gosh.
It really is. We have 5 children. They're all married with children. In fact, we have 28 grandchildren and 2 on the way. One is due in just 3 weeks. And the other one's coming in July, and we're really excited about it. So that'll be 30, which really is another shocker. But 3 of our daughters live in Bernie and with their families. And my oldest daughter lives in Arizona, Phoenix. And my son lives in Massachusetts.
Nice.
So, yeah. Wow. But the Arizonians, if that's the correct Arizonans, and my son and his wife and children from Massachusetts are coming for Easter. So that's really exciting.
Oh, so everyone will be together.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. That's so fun. I bet the grandkids are just loving having so many cousins too.
Oh, they're excited.
Yeah. That's so great. Oh, that's so cool. Wow. So, okay. So 45 years and 30 grandchildren. I'm really excited to get into that story. So how did it all begin? How did you guys meet?
Well, we worked at the Star Market on Boylston Street in Boston. It was a downtown market, which at the time there weren't very many of them. I think that might have been the only one. So it was kind of unique. We're both going to college, different colleges. I went to one college, she went to another, but we both had part-time jobs there. And we met while we were working there.
Wow, that's awesome.
He used to wink at me as I was on the cash register, and he would stock the shelves, but then on his way out, I would be kind of looking over to see if he was leaving, and before we really knew each other, and he would just have a scally cap on and look over and wink.
Oh, so
I'd like to meet him.
Well, she had and still has the prettiest smile I've ever seen.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh my gosh. So who made the first move? I'm assuming you, Tom.
Well, actually,
not really.
No, not really. We really didn't.
Okay, there you go.
There was a Christmas party at work, and we met formally, I would say, there.
Well, nice. So we walked in, and I had gone to the party with a boy that I knew from high school, just as a friend. We were in the same town. So since it was in Boston, he gave me a ride. So we're sitting at the same table, and Tom walked in, and I turned to Jimmy, and I said, Jimmy, who is that? And instead of telling me, he starts yelling, hey, Tom, Tom, and he goes running over to him. So then Tom was at the bar, and I actually got up and went over to the bar and kind of introduced myself. And, you know, and then from there, he tells me later, though, he waited until I bought a drink before he asked me if I wanted a drink because he didn't have that much money.
Yeah, thanks for the drink and walk away.
Oh my gosh. Said, I can't be buying you drinks all night. We're not even going to go out. Oh my gosh. That's so
funny. We danced at the party, and then he asked me out, and we went out 2 weeks later on Christmas night. We were supposed to go out. He asked me out for midnight mass, actually, which was a really good sign.
Yeah.
And then it snowed, and he called and said he couldn't get the car out of the driveway.
I didn't have snow tires, so.
Oh my gosh. Oh no.
He couldn't get it out of the driveway.
Shoot.
So the next night I was able to go out Christmas night.
to the movies. It was the weirdest thing. I'd never done anything like that before. I come from an Italian family, so everybody's there, you know, and we're all celebrating and everything. And I announced that I'm going on a date, first date on Christmas night to the movies.
Yeah.
The movies were open on Christmas. But anyway, that's what started it. And then when he brought me home, he just asked me out for, I think, a week later or 2 weeks later or something. 2 weeks, I think, because you had to work on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, or maybe New Year's night. I don't know. It was.
Well, it's kind of foggy.
I was just at the end of one date, I'd always ask her for another date.
Yeah.
So she couldn't change her mind.
Nice. Oh, that's so sweet. Oh my gosh. What did you kind of figure out early on in dating that you thought you wanted to be together for a long time?
We dated for about 2.5 years, and we really enjoyed each other's company. Oh, I mean, we just seemed to click. He made me laugh. I thought it was so exciting because he lived in the city and I lived in the suburbs. So it was a kind of a hike for him to pick me up. But he'd always have dates planned for the city. And, you know, I didn't go into Boston that often because I went in for classes and things at that time. It wasn't really typical for students to live in away from home or in dorms. It wasn't typical. Some people did it, but since we were just a train ride away, we just lived at home and went to classes. But 2.5 years. Okay, this is kind of a funny story. We did talk about marriage, but we were still in college and, you know, kind of young. And we decided to go on an engaged encounter to see if we wanted to become engaged.
Oh. It was
the right thing, you know, and weighing all the options. So we did. We went on the engaged encounter. It was beautiful. It was up in New Hampshire, which I don't know if you're familiar with the Northeast, but it's just a beautiful, lovely Franciscan site. It was a retreat house with on the ocean and all. Mm-hmm. So we made the engaged encounter and we became engaged shortly after that at Easter.
Oh.
And planned the wedding for the following year.
Nice.
So then as part of our pre-Cana preparation.
A year later.
Mm-hmm.
We went back on an engaged encounter for real this time. And while we were there, the priest, it was the same priest, a Franciscan father, and he kind of nudges me over and says, hey, how you doing? Have you been here before? I said, yeah, I was here last year. He said, same girl?
That is so classic. Oh my gosh.
He told us at the end of the retreat, he said, I think you two are going to do great things.
Yeah.
We're still waiting for that part, but you know.
30 grandkids. I think you did something. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. I think that's such a great idea that you went before you got engaged to kind of discern that. A little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of strange being with all these people talking about, you know.
They're planning their wedding.
And they really, some of them were closer than others, and it was good for us.
Yes.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that.
One thing I will tell you, I noticed on some of the questions about, like, maybe disagreements or arguments or something.
Yeah.
On the engaged encounter, I knew this early on, or I found out on the engaged encounter that, you know, you do a lot of writing. So they give you questions, you go through separate ways, answer the questions, and then come together to share your answers. So I'm writing, you know, pages and pages on each question. And then we would switch books and Tom would have like a paragraph, you know, say, is this it? You know, is this all, you know, you have to say? And he'd say, well, yeah, answer the question. You know, I thought you might want to say a little more about that, you know. But anyway, that's still typical. You know, he's very concise and succinct, and he says what he needs to say in fewer words than I write many. So,
yeah,
anyway, that was one thing I knew early on, very early on. But I decided to go through with it anyway.
I love it. Short and sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh my gosh. So, okay. So you You dated 2.5 years. You went on your engaged encounter. You got engaged. Where did you get married? In Boston, probably. Were both your families from there?
St. Patrick's Church, which was my wife's home parish.
Nice.
Watertown. Yeah, Mass.
That's awesome. Were your families like very supportive of your relationship, or how was that kind of adjustment?
I guess so. I mean, I was the oldest in my family, the first one to get married.
Okay.
Oldest by a little bit of a stretch before anyone else would even have a serious girlfriend or anything. So it was a new experience for my family. But you had two sisters who were married.
Yes.
They had kids. So they were really happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his mom thought he was a little too young. Well, he was young. He was 22 and I was 24, so I was like rocking the cradle. But but you know, they didn't oppose it or anything like that. I mean, they just said, "Well, you know, you're young." And but it's worked out, I guess.
Yeah.
What we're doing. But you know, it was the 70s, so when they gave us a booklet for preparing our marriage, our wedding ceremony, we took full advantage of all of it, which is probably going to sound really strange to you. And I would not do it today. But at the time, we made a banner for our wedding with the symbol for Christ, the P and the X and the rings in between. We made that and hung from the altar. We made our own bread. And there was a recipe in the book, and it had to be unleavened and all. Did that, and we bought the wine for the ceremony, and then at the end, that we had a guitarist, which that was something that our families thought.
And the organist too.
Yes, the organist for the processional and recessional, but then the guitarist for the ceremony, and that was really different for our families. And at the end, they sang "Wherever You Go, I Shall Go" from the Song of Ruth.
Yeah.
And there's a part in there that you can recite. And so Tom and I got up and recited the part, while they were singing. So I thought it was really nice.
Very nice. But it was 1979, the end of the 70s.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no video recording or anything, but we did have a cassette tape, and we recorded it that way.
Oh,
but
nice!
It was a beautiful wedding.
Yes,
you know it was, and we had got pregnant on our honeymoon and expected our first baby. I don't want to jump ahead, but
yeah,
that was difficult. So
yeah, what was that like for you? Your first year and expecting a baby and all of that. Well,
We lived in New Hampshire. We moved back to Massachusetts a couple months after we got married, a few months after we get married. And Esther was pregnant. She ran into some difficulty in the pregnancy in October. And
we ended up losing the baby.
Losing the baby.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
Which was a strange and, we were young. We didn't have any experience in any of this. And the doctors, I'm not blaming the doctors, right? I don't mean that. But there were four doctors, and each one would have a slightly different opinion on the rotation. It was very, very difficult and chancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very sad when that happened. And something that we didn't expect in any way, you know?
Gosh, I'm so sorry. That's so tough. It was.
Yeah, it was a little girl. And so the thing was, we had shortly after that looked at a Time magazine article. It told us all the things. It was just a general article about things that happen in your life that take years away from your life. So
it's
funny, that was 45 years later, but the first year of our marriage, we looked at it and it was like, we bought a house. Well, first of all, we got married. We became pregnant. We bought a house. We lost the baby. Tom got a new job. We moved to another state. I mean, we had almost everything on the list, and immediately about 30 years of our lives were, supposedly going to be taken away.
Yeah. Those are like all the most stressful things you'll do.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
But, we became pregnant shortly after that and had had our oldest, Megan, and, so that was beautiful, and my husband said that was the happiest day of his life, and it was mine too, really.
Yeah. We didn't know if we'd ever have children.
That's beautiful. I'm so glad that, you know, you were able to have that experience after such a just gut-wrenching time with your first pregnancy.
Well, we really felt too that God played a hand in that. Of course he did, but we were in New Hampshire and the healthcare was different. The doctors, I didn't know there was a certain procedure that I needed to have. I had to have my cervix stitched with every one of my children, and they didn't do that then. It was a very new procedure. So I was able to go to the Brigham in Boston, which was a top-notch hospital. And I really thank God, because that's really why I think we were, who knows if we had stayed in New Hampshire, if we would have been able to have children. But, you know, we came to Boston and got the best care, and the rest is history.
Yeah, that's really good. I know this might be too personal or too much, but do you have any advice for someone who might be going through something like that, struggling with fertility or loss of a child? I know that that's really personal, so no need to answer.
No, but we're far away from it, enough away from it. Our family members reacted differently to it. That was part of the difficult part, because people don't know how to react to you. I mean, I would say to a young couple, just hold on to each other and talk to each other about it, because people are going to say things to you that is going to make it potentially worse for you. So you have to realize that they're where they're at, and they, from their own personal experiences, are saying what they're saying. And even if they've lost a child, they may not react in a compassionate way, because they may be steeled to themselves against it, or never faced it completely, or something like that. So try and look at, why did that person say that to me? Especially they've lost a child themselves. Well, because that's where they're at. You know, I mean, we can't look to other people. So I think as a couple, a husband and wife, you know, need to cling to each other. And, even though we were young and newly married, in a way, maybe that was to our advantage, because, you know, we went into our marriage so optimistic and happy, and, you know, we were going to make a difference in the world, and everything was going to be wonderful. And, you know, 5 months later, we had the most devastating thing, really, of our lives. We didn't understand.
Can't plan for that, you know.
Right.
And we didn't even know how to react ourselves. You know, we wanted to bury the baby, and, you know, we were being told, well, it's only 20 weeks. And we just like, it's our baby. And we did bury it, and the priest, we had a good friend of ours that was a priest, and he came to the cemetery and said prayers. But he even said to us, well, I don't think there are any prayers for this. That was kind of disappointing. Like, can you just ad lib,
say something?
Well, yeah. He did.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
But we had a very kind funeral director too.
Very.
Okay. That's good.
He was so wonderful, because he knew we were young and just starting out, and he just provided us with everything along with the guidance. So anyway, that was an experience, and that's how we started out. But I think it made us stronger, you know, and the other thing is too, every child that we've had since then, we have absolutely appreciated and loved, and not that you take advantage or take for granted, I mean, but sometimes, you know, it can just be like, you know, okay, another baby, but you're just like, another baby, you know? And
yeah. Such a gift. Yeah. When you know what it's like to lose that, I think. Yeah, I think that would make it so much more meaningful, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think that will help a lot of people. I think it's one of the things that no one really talks about, but I think it's important for young couples to hear that. Thank you so much.
I think going through it, there were things we had to figure out
Yeah.
How to do it. So there will be some growing pains through it, but the result of it would be that we would be stronger in that.
Yeah.
It's not like, I knew all the right things to say or, had all the right ideas right up. We had to learn from each other.
Yeah. So as you know, we talked about the engaged encounter, and one of the things that I already knew about him was that he was not a man of expressing his emotions readily. So that was hard because I was expressing my emotions, and it was really hard not knowing what would be happening in the future. And then while Tom was supportive and all, he could only say what he felt, which I mean he could actually I mean it was it just wasn't like, he didn't know what to say to comfort me really. I will say though, with the birth of Megan, I mean that really helped tremendously. We were advised by the doctor not to have children for a while, for a year, but we didn't pay attention to that. I mean, we just felt that that was a decision. It wasn't a danger to me or anything like that.
Okay, it was
Yeah, like if you do this, your life will be in danger. It wasn't that. It was just a question, and we just felt, no, we know we want children. We are so sad about this. And while this baby is not replacing our first baby, it could never. We're so happy to be, to be expecting again and to have another child because that is what happened. So, and it was a healing for us, really. Yep. Never forgotten her. My oldest daughter named her youngest daughter. Her middle name is our baby's name is Angela, so gave her that middle name, and that was really special. So all of the children know about her, and know that they have a older sister in heaven, and
That's cute.
I think the way it worked was the way it was supposed to work.
Yeah, she's a little angel, watching down on your family. That's beautiful. That's really, really cool. So how, what's like the age gap between your kids? Like how did that break down?
11 years between the oldest one and the youngest one.
Okay.
And he's the only boy. The other four are girls.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so we lost the first child, and then the next two were girls. Megan and Mara are 17 months apart, and then we lost two more in the same year, 2 years later, with two earlier miscarriages early on, and then 2 years after that, I had Maria, and 2 years after that, I had Tommy. Oh, I'm sorry. No, 2 years after that, I had Teresa. Yes, Teresa.
Teresa.
And then 2 years after that, I had Maria. And 2 years after that, Tommy.
Okay. Nice. Would you say your relationship kind of changed after having multiple children? I know a lot of people say like a big adjustment when you have less time and you're running around with the kids, you kind of can sometimes lose your connection with your spouse a little bit. What was your experience with that?
I mean, Tom, we didn't say this, but Tom, my husband, Tom was a Boston police detective for 34 years. The job was demanding and busy. I'm a teacher 20 years, and I was in administration for four. So when we got married, I decided to stay home with my children. So at that point, I no longer worked. And then after my youngest went just was in, I don't know, fourth grade or something, I went back to teaching. But my husband worked the whole time. And there's overtime, and the more children you have, the more you need, and things like that. So yes, our relationship did change, but we always worked around it. So if his work schedule was he had to go in at four, like 4 to midnight. And also it was the situation where there's, I don't know if you're familiar with the police department, but 4 days on, 2 days off. So he would almost always have to work a Sunday unless it was the sixth and seventh week. So on Sundays, we always kept Sunday special. So when he was working 4 to midnight, we would have a dinner and we would have everything before that, and then he would go off to work.
The same thing for holidays. My wife would do a great job. When the calendar would come out, she'd mark off my days off the whole year. She'd say, oh, you're off Thanksgiving this year. Oh, you're off Christmas. Oh, you have to Christmas Eve, you're off. And she would look it out and figure it out, and we would always adjust. Sometimes I'd have to work, sometimes I wouldn't. And then the bad thing would be in the middle of it, for some reason, until you had seniority, your squad could change, and so we have to cross out the X's and make new ones and redo the calendar.
But oh my gosh!
She did an excellent job of adjusting to our schedule where we didn't have a typical.
Yeah.
If I don't think anybody still has it, but a typical 9 to 5 schedule, Monday through Friday. I only had that the last 2 years I was working.
Gotcha. Married
and gone then.
When the kids were little, and he worked 7:30 to 4. We would adjust it that way. But it was great when he was on that 4 to midnight shift, because we would just take advantage of that during the week because he was off. So we could do things during the week that when other people, you know, their husbands or they were working and couldn't go places, we would do that. So we just made do, and we always had, like, we always tried to have big family gatherings, make a big deal out of holidays, invite our families and birthdays and things like that whenever we could. So
that's really cool. Mm. Nice. And now you guys you're both retired, right?
Yes.
So how's the empty nester retired phase going? Like, you have so much more time probably. No.
I don't know what happens. I don't know what it is. It's a strange phenomenon. I can't explain it. I don't understand it, but I think I got more done while I was working, even working overtime and working, than I do now.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm sitting in front of the TV at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning watching TV all day or anything like that. I mean, I'm busy all day.
Yeah.
But the time seems to be going. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, we're not big TV watchers anyway. No. But we got involved in our parish, and they offer a lot of courses. Like right now we're taking a course on the Acts of the Apostles on Mondays. There's a course for Lent on the Sorrowful Mysteries on Fridays, and we do things like that. We love to go out to breakfast once a week, and we really enjoy that to catch up. But, you know, I will tell you, when we first moved here, when we first became retired, I felt as though we were bumping into each other in the kitchen way too much. You know, I always had, you know, rain over the kitchen, and all of a sudden I'm smearing it. It's like, I was just about to go to the sink. Well, I'm here now and I'm doing this. You know? That was a little bit of an adjustment.
That's an adjustment, yes.
Sure. We're actually still working it out. It's much better though.
That's good. Yeah. When you're working for so long, it's, you just don't deal with that until you're back in each other's space. And there you go. I think my parents are, my dad just started a new job, but they're almost at that point. So, you know, but every time my dad is like, has a day off or something, my mom's like, I'm going crazy. Your dad is everywhere, you know.
Sentiments exactly.
Yeah, you're just not used to it, I guess.
Yeah, right. But you know, it is nice to have him here, though. I know I did go back to work for 20 years, so I was working up to retirement, and that was different, also.
Yeah.
But it's nice to be. It's nice to be together again, and planning things together, and. You know, one thing that early on in our marriage, I remember saying to him, I hope that we have as much fun when we're old as we do now. I hope I still look forward to seeing you coming through the door or spending time with you as much as I love it now. And I can say I do. And I'm glad about that. You know, I'm really happy about that. So
that's amazing. Yeah, that's what we're all looking for. So I know you guys do a lot of things together, obviously, and you're still clearly very much friends and in love. What are some like practical things you guys kind of do to show each other that you love each other, I guess, like throughout the day? Or what are things that people could do to kind of remind their spouse, like, hey, I'm thinking about you, I love you?
I think sometimes if you look out for things that your wife might like, obviously, you know, if you bought a dozen roses every day, it would wear off. But from time to time, things like some flowers or a special dessert or a meal or something, or, you know, that there's a movie on TV that you think she might like, might suggest this. Little things like that, little courtesies and romantic things that you might do would be one way.
Well, also, like, if I know that he likes things a certain way, or something that I don't need to do that he can do himself, but I'll do and just leave it there, and he notices that, oh, you did this? Oh, I was just about to do it. You know, little things like that. And then I think saying, you know, recognizing them too. Oh, yeah. Thanks. I noticed that you poured me a cup of coffee, or you got you got my, I was going to say, like, you got my pills out that I needed to take.
Yeah.
We're just getting over strep. So,
oh my gosh.
You know, yeah. We get the antibiotics and all that going.
So I think if you're aware of it, you try to be aware of it, you don't take it for granted. And that it keeps something fresh in you that you have to, you know, notice these things and say something about them to acknowledge thanks to the other person.
Yeah.
I think it's really important, and you have to want it to. You have to want to do it. And I mean, marriage, and I remember hearing about it and all of that, like working on your marriage all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always thinking about, I mean, obviously when you know your kids are young, you have to pay attention to your children. But my pediatrician told me early on with Megan, don't forget your husband was here before the kids. And don't ever forget that. And I thought that was really wise advice. I mean, a baby needs things when they need them. And young children need things when they need them. And even older children need you that when they need you. But to not like put the kids first all the time.
Right.
Because your husband was there first. And even with the husbands, you know, like the husband comes in and kisses his wife hello when he comes, you know, when he comes in before the kids. And it just speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really true.
Volumes to the kids. And, you know, when they always say too, I've heard a number of times, and I think it's true, the best gift a father can give his children is to love their mother. You know, and the same for a mom too, because kids like that, you know, our kids have said things to us about the marriage that we try to have and things like that. They notice, you know, and I think modeling all of that, it's not perfect. I mean, I don't want to sound perfect, but trying, like the effort that goes into it all the time, making it, bringing it up to a level of importance where it should be. Lots of things fall into place when that's done, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it really is a gift. And also it teaches your kids what kind of spouse to look for too, and how they want their family to be, and then how they want to act in front of their kids. Like, you know, I always loved growing up when mom and dad would like kiss when they saw each other when they came home from work or something. Like, I want that with my future wife or husband. I think that does really impact. It probably impacts kids more than you realize, honestly. But that is really cool. And you're also, you're like establishing a very loving family now with, you know, all your children and grandchildren seeing you still putting in the effort, like you said. Mm-hmm. That's very special.
And, you know, we love all of our sons-in-law. They're wonderful, wonderful faith-filled men. And our daughter-in-law, she's a wonderful, faithful woman, and we're just very fortunate to have our children have found their spouses mm-hmm. that they did, and have them. I think they all have. It's hard. It's because they have large families,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, and it's hard. But they have wonderful marriages and very loving marriages, and we're very grateful for that. Because you also want your children to be happy,
of course. Yeah, totally happy and also like being
God-fearing,
exactly, and being led towards heaven,
exactly.
Yeah,
because that's the goal.
That's the goal for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really great. This is kind of just one of the questions that we like to ask, but what has surprised you about marriage?
I think one of the things that surprised us is, you know, you're young and you're somewhat idealistic, that you don't realize how hard it is at times, but how good it is all the time. We've been getting through the hard times is good, and that we realize that God gave us to each other, and, you know, we do try to remind each other of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite regularly, you know.
I love that. Yeah.
I think that's a surprise for a lot of people. It's not, you know, it's not that anybody thinks they have a fairy tale life or anything like that, but at times it is very difficult.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the best thing you'll ever do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. Yeah, it's all the highs and lows, but with the people that you love by your side.
Right.
Do you have stories that you feel like would be fun or helpful or anything?
One thing I would say to anyone who has daughters who start bringing boys home,
mm-hmm.
An old friend told me. Says after the second or third time, you have to look at this guy coming around and say to yourself, can I look at him over the next 25 or 30 Thanksgiving dinners? And if the answer is no, you have to make your objections known. You can't just think he's passing through. And oh, so it was good advice that I, you know, thanked him for it. And, you know,
That's a good one. I think for
husbands, the fathers who are looking at their daughters as they reach a certain age and start, you know, bringing home guys.
Yeah.
With the parents.
One thing we used to do, though, when the girls would bring their boyfriend over for dinner or something like that, we would go into the living room after dinner and say the rosary and invite the boy. Yeah, because my son's the youngest, and but I think Mary's probably, we probably made the rosary before, but with her for sure. But they were in New York, so it was harder to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking really early on, and yeah. Really all of them, we would say the rosary. And I always thought that was good. It wasn't an intentional thing. It was something that we just naturally did anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because initially I thought, oh, should we do this, you know, with them there? Maybe they don't pray the rosary. And then it was kind of like, well, okay, well, you know, this could be a telling moment also, you know, yeah. Like, oh, wow, I don't think I want to, you know.
That was fine, yeah.
It never was. I mean, maybe it was a case of somebody saying, oh, I forgot how to say it or something like that. But it was pretty much from our point of view. Yeah, welcome.
Yeah.
They did it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a great thing, too, because I felt as though we could, you know, we would be blessed in that way, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would, is this the right person for my daughter? Or maybe they would see, maybe my daughter would see, oh, this is the right person or not. You know, I don't know. We never delved into it. We just did it. But I think it's a good suggestion if anybody mm-hmm. would be wanting to do something like that. They had children that age and were dating and all. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm gonna, yeah, we just have our daughter now, but I'm like, I'll tell my husband this, let him know that.
That's yeah, it's really just your family practices, and you encourage whoever the newcomer is to take part in it.
Yeah.
You know, it might be something completely new for them.
Right.
That's fine, but if they're open to it, that's a good sign.
Yeah. Another thing we've done is we enthroned our home to the Sacred Heart. Well, not right away, but probably like maybe 20, 25 years into our, 20 years into our marriage. Okay. And that was one of the greatest blessings for us. Mm. We had a big trial in our family after that. My husband needed brain surgery.
Oh, wow.
And everything was successful, but that was a big blessing. And now a few of our daughters have adopted that in their home too. It's a beautiful devotion to have in your home, and it's basically enthroning your home to the Sacred Heart, and for protection and all and love, and for all the family members.
That's really cool. I'm gonna look that up too. That's amazing. Yeah, I'll try to link that in the show notes for this episode, so people can check that out. One more thing, if you could give newly engaged or newly married couples one piece of advice, or if there's something that you wish you would have known, you know, when you were just starting out, let us know. What would that be?
Yeah, it's actually more than one piece. It's a couple pieces, but don't be prideful. Pride is a killer in everything, especially in marriage. And don't fight against it. And don't fight against your own pride. And don't be prideful.
Yeah.
Then also, another thing is to say your prayers, and hang in there. It's worth it. It's well worth it.
And I would say, never give up on each other, and it does only get better as time goes on, because you hit a point where, you know, your spouse is the person that knows you the best of anyone in the world, and loves you the most, and that's, you know, that's an advantage in life that you're just not going to get anywhere else. And then also rely on the grace of the sacrament to get you through whatever it is that's difficult in the moment, because there's a lot of difficulty out there that can hurt a marriage. And just, you know, I think that we've heard it in so many places that, you know, marriage is really on the chopping block, kind of. It's like the devil is out there to destroy marriages, and we have to keep that in mind, because our own defects and things can just cause us to make situations worse when they can be resolved. You know?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
That's so true.
The grace of the sacrament.
Yeah, the grace of the sacrament. I feel like you don't realize how impactful that is until you do get married and you're in these difficult situations. And then you think back on them and you're like, how did we get through that?
Mm-hmm.
Or how did we... How were we able to help each other in those moments? And I can already say, even I've only been married a little over a year, but like, I can already see the grace of the sacrament moving. And I'm sure after 45 years, you've seen it just grow and grow in abundance. So that's such great advice. And it was a great conversation. I'm really grateful to both of you for sharing your story a little bit with us and helping young couples just starting out. Thank you so much. And I will lead us in the prayer to Mary, Mother of Fearless Love. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Mary, Mother of Fearless Love, you are the mother of Jesus and our mother. Intercede for us with your Son, as you did at the wedding at Cana. Pray for us, fairest mother, to strengthen and bless our families. Help those called to marriage to find their spouses and teach them to love with a pure and selfless love. Accompany parents in the upbringing and education of their children with unconditional love. Help those who have answered the call, the Father's call to the consecrated life or to apostolic celibacy, to be generous and faithful to their vocations. Bring peace, unity, and joy to the homes of families that are broken or burdened. Accompany with the warmth of your presence those who are alone. You are the Mater Pulchre de Lectionis, the Mother of Beautiful Love. Help us to love as Jesus loves, so we may show each other love full of mercy and forgiveness. May all our love and affections be always faithful, pure, and chaste. Dear Mother, be our refuge in our material and spiritual needs, and intercede especially for the whole Keeley family and for our listeners. May we grow in love and come to know true peace and joy now and in the life to come in heaven. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. That was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. We hope you enjoyed that conversation. As always, thanks for joining us for this episode of After Cana. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or visit us at ferrisloveshrine.org.